Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation will be with Mike Malek Amadi, a bioinformatics scientist with Banner Alzheimer's Institute. And we're going to be discussing the science of preventing Alzheimer's disease. We currently know there are over 6 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. And a lot of information is coming out about risk factors around age and genetics and gender and strategies to reduce your risk with lifestyle factors, exercising, eating well, staying socially active, getting enough sleep. Really, the focus is now turning to, is there a way to prevent Alzheimer's disease altogether? And I recall when I first started learning about Banner Alzheimer's and considering coming to work for this incredible organization, they were really known for their research into prevention. And this was really my first foray into research. So this was really kind of mind-blowing for me. And Janice, I remember first coming to Banner Alzheimer's Institute and walking in these doors and having so much respect for the work that was happening that I didn't fully understand. And when you walk into Banner Alzheimer's Institute, you come into this big lobby, and then off to the right is the computational analysis wing. And there's a sign and you need a badge to get in there. And I just remember thinking, what could possibly be behind those doors? It just, my imagination ran wild with what could possibly be happening back there. What equipment was back there? Well, I finally got a tour one day and they opened the computational analysis wing and it was a whole bunch of cubicles with computers. I remember thinking, oh, this is not quite what I had envisioned it to be. But you know what I realized? The really impressive part back there was not the equipment, not the computers. The really impressive part was the scientists and the minds behind what was going on in that wing. And so I'm so excited to have our conversation with Dr. Malek Amadi today to learn more about the science of preventing Alzheimer's.
It must have been an amazing experience to go behind those locked doors. And it is so fascinating to learn about clinical research studies that are looking at things like new tests for the prevention of Alzheimer's disease or treatments or medications, and then evaluating the effectiveness of those on really amazing, generous people who volunteer to take part in these studies and to whom we are just so grateful to. And it's also fascinating to find out just what happens behind those locked doors and behind the scenes and what has been and continues to be discovered. I am so excited about our conversation today. I am just feeling so hopeful.
Welcome, Dr. Malek Amadi.
No, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here with all of you.
Before we learn more about the work that you do, I would like to learn a little bit more about you. Could you tell us about your journey and what led you to connect to the dementia community?
Yes, gladly. So I graduated from the University of Arizona with a Bachelor of Science in Psychology in 2003. And immediately after graduating, I went to work in the neurology department at the U of A. And I was working with the late Dr. Jeff Ahern, who was a behavioral neurologist there, specifically with dementias, Alzheimer's disease, among other things. And his primary focus was dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, what I thought was going to be a, you know, a 1 year gap between, you know, finishing undergraduate and going to graduate school, turned into a 3 year gap, which, you know, really, you know, solidified my desire and passion to stay in the field of Alzheimer's research. And so even after I, you know, after 3 years, went off to graduate school and attended the University of South Florida and got my master's degree in epidemiology, I still very much, you know, wanted to, you know, still be in the Alzheimer's research area. At that time, early on in my career, I was working in clinical research studies. So I was getting to work with the patients and their families and, you know, getting those really great interactions. And the nice thing about clinical research that, you know, no one talks about enough, I think, is that when somebody enrolls into a clinical trial, you know, you get to build a relationship with, you know, somebody who, you know, really, really cares about, you know, Alzheimer's disease and finding, you know, an effective treatment and a cure. And I think for so many people who receive the Alzheimer's disease diagnosis, you know, there's so much, you know, stigma around, oh, it's incurable, there's nothing we can do about it. But when you get to be with somebody and see somebody over and over again over the course of 3-5 years who doesn't think that, who is giving you hope, you know, that's so huge. And that's really what made me, you know, want to still be a part of it. And even though I haven't, you know, had patient contact for, you know, several years now, I still very much think about, you know, the families, the individuals I met early on in my career. So that's what really inspires me to, you know, continue doing the work that I do now.
I think that's such an interesting story. And you mentioned going from having this sort of patient contact, which when I think of research, I think of that more outward facing view. You know, people are going in and getting blood draws. You're having researchers taking them to get an MRI or a PET scan or something like that. But you don't have that direct patient contact. You're a bioinformatics scientist in computational analysis. Can you help us better understand what it is that you actually do?
Yes. So, you know, the field of bioinformatics generally refers to, you know, measuring, you know, biological phenomenon and putting it into a way that we can analyze it and get results from it. So for me, being a bioinformatics scientist, my role actually is much more like that of a statistician. So I serve as a collaborator and also an independent investigator to, you know, individuals within Banner Alzheimer's Institute, but also at other institutions, you know, outside of our institute, and I will, you know, help them analyze their data, you know, provide them guidance on, you know, what variables should be collected and what kind of data they should be looking at. So really, you know, the bioinformatics scientist is, at least in my context, being a statistician. The computational analysis part simply refers to what we do with the brain images once they're taken. So, you know, when somebody comes in and has an MRI or a PET scan done, you know, it produces, you know, a picture of the brain. And, you know, from that picture, what we do is take that picture, you know, run it through some very sophisticated software, and we generate numbers from that picture. And we use those numbers to do the actual research and to figure out, you know, which brain regions are more affected in the earliest stages of Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, what kinds of, brain signals, you know, do we see that may be helpful in identifying people who are, you know, in the earliest stages of the disease?
Thank you so much for that explanation. And thank you for sharing your story and about this new perspective to me about how the relationships that you built continue to inspire you, to bring you hope, and to help make a difference in this world. And speaking of, one of the things that we talked about was the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. Can you talk to us about what's been discovered about the biology of Alzheimer's disease?
Yes. So, you know, very generally speaking, you know, when we talk about the biology of Alzheimer's disease, or what actually is, you know, what we think are causing the cognitive problems that occur, are proteins that build up in the brain, and we refer to them as amyloid and tau, and they basically become plaques and tangles in the brain. And we know these are pretty much now considered to be the, you know, hallmark and the most well-known markers of Alzheimer's disease. And for, you know, many years, you know, we knew that, you know, these were probably associated with the disease somehow and the loss of cognitive abilities and functions, but it was never quite clear how exactly that was occurring. And the one thing that we could not do was we could not see if these plaques and tangles were forming before the cognitive symptoms occurred. So it used to be that, you know, anyone would say, well, you can't diagnose Alzheimer's disease until you have an autopsy. So for a long time, that was the case. But, you know, now that we have technologies with PET scanning, we can actually see if the plaques and tangles are built, have accumulated in someone's brain, even before they're showing symptoms. And so really the idea here is that if we can identify people before they show cognitive symptoms, that we can intervene earlier and, you know, hopefully at least significantly delay, or in the best case scenario, completely prevent them from getting those cognitive symptoms in the first place. So really that's the whole big picture idea behind Alzheimer's prevention.
What I hear you saying is through imaging, we're now able to see that plaques and tangles, these hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease, start developing before the actual outward symptoms of the disease?
Yes. So one of the, you know, major, you know, pieces of knowledge that we've gained in the last decade or so is that we found that the actual biological process of Alzheimer's disease, in that the formation of these plaques and tangles happens anywhere or begins about 20 to 30 years before symptoms occur. And so what our ultimate goal is that, you know, we would have, you know, screening, you know, set up to be able to screen people at a certain age and then be able to, you know, identify them, you know, if their amyloid or tau levels are at a certain level, you know, at a certain age, you know, they're either still not at risk or at higher risk. And then, you know, they can proceed accordingly with the treatment, with a treatment plan, or, you know, whatever else may be recommended by that time. But really that's, you know, that is where we're trying to go with it, is to, you know, really kind of morph what we think of Alzheimer's disease and change it from a clinical diagnosis to a biological diagnosis.
Mike, you had mentioned the word amyloid. Can you explain to us what the amyloid cascade hypothesis is?
Yes. So amyloid itself is a protein that occurs naturally in the body. And what we think happens in Alzheimer's disease is that the mechanisms that clear it from the brain become dysfunctional. So the amyloid cascade hypothesis basically says that the deposits of amyloid plaques are the initial stage of, or the beginning stage of Alzheimer's disease. And from there, as, you know, more and more plaque accumulates, you then get to a certain level, and that's when the tangles that are made up of the tau protein begin to accumulate. It's really the idea that, you know, amyloid is the first part of the disease process, although there is quite a bit of controversy still surrounding that. But generally, that's what the amyloid cascade hypothesis puts forth.
You mentioned this accumulation of amyloid being the initial or the beginning stage. And when I think of Alzheimer's, I think of early, middle, and late stage when someone is symptomatic. But you're saying now there's preclinical Alzheimer's disease?
Yes. So preclinical Alzheimer's disease, you know, for a very basic definition of it, would be the presence of a biological marker for Alzheimer's disease, be it an elevated level of amyloid or tau, but without any, you know, cognitive difficulties or any cognitive decline. So very much like, you know, how we screen for cancer and, you know, other diseases, you know, we do screening tests that look for the biological markers of the disease, rather than waiting until, you know, a tumor forms or some other, you know, thing occurs that indicates the cancer is present.
So you mentioned screenings. I know that right now I can't just go to the doctor, or someone can't go to the doctor and just say, hey, I need a screening. I think I might have Alzheimer's disease. Or can we?
So that's a very good and difficult question to answer. So as it stands right now, we can do cognitive screening. So, you know, a physician can do a very brief bedside cognitive test in order to determine what someone's actual, you know, level of cognitive function is. When we're thinking and when we're speaking about, you know, biological screening, whether it's a, you know, PET scan or a blood test, those have not hit prime time yet in the clinical settings. We've tried very hard to get them implemented in clinical settings, but there have been, you know, several financial and regulatory issues, you know, surrounding those. But, you know, the whole intent is that there will come a day where the screening process for Alzheimer's disease would start with the blood test at a certain age, much like we do, you know, for other, you know, diseases like cancer and diabetes and things like that. So once a person reaches a certain age, they get a blood test. If that blood test comes up positive, they would then get that PET scan to determine whether there is a certain level of amyloid that's been deposited in the brain. And if that test would be positive, you know, then we would put somebody on a therapy, you know, that would be attacking the actual disease itself, going after the amyloid plaques that have been deposited. And again, the hope there is that by doing it before cognitive symptoms occur, you, at the very least, delay how long it takes for them to show clinical symptoms, and at the very best, completely delay the clinical symptoms altogether. In that, you know, latter scenario, you're then completely redefining what Alzheimer's disease is. You're taking away the clinical component completely and just having Alzheimer's disease, you know, be a biologically diagnosed entity and not having a clinical component to it.
I wonder if you could explain that a little bit more for our listeners, moving from this clinically defined disorder to a biological entity.
You know, really it just boils down to, you know, having, you know, good diagnostic tests, which we have currently. And right now I can say with a great deal of certainty, the blood tests, both for amyloid and tau, are, you know, very much, you know, very close to, you know, being implemented very widely in clinical settings. Really what we're just trying to, you know, convey here is that when we talk about doing a biological diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, is that a blood test that would be positive followed by a brain scan that would also be positive for amyloid and or tau would then allow a clinician to, you know, diagnose Alzheimer's disease, because, you know, those tests would indicate that the biology of Alzheimer's disease is there. But again, we're doing this before any clinical symptoms occur.
So in doing all of this, what will it mean in the long run for prevention research and for preventing Alzheimer's disease?
Well, ultimately, as I've, you know, alluded to, you know, it's going to change the very definition and our very, you know, concept of what Alzheimer's disease is. And, you know, ultimately what we're hoping for is that we come to a day where we say that we have a survivor of Alzheimer's disease in the same way that we have, you know, people who survive cancer. So take a hypothetical example of somebody who, you know, got a blood test for the amyloid protein. This blood test is positive, or, you know, hits a certain level, and then they go to have the brain scan done, and it shows that they do have, you know, a lot of amyloid that's been deposited in their brain, and then they get started on a treatment that, you know, significantly slows or completely stops the progression of that, of the plaques themselves. By virtue of that, you know, if that person went on to never develop clinical symptoms, we would call that person a survivor of Alzheimer's disease. They had the biological underpinnings of the disease, but never got the clinical manifestations. So really, you know, that's what we're ultimately hoping for, is to have what we would consider to be a survivor of Alzheimer's disease.
Wow, the thought of the first survivor of Alzheimer's disease, it catches my breath. It's so exciting to think of all of the many years that we have looked towards this moment. I wonder if you could share with us, looking forward, what gets you most excited about the direction of Alzheimer's research?
Well, I will say that, you know, for the entirety of my career, you know, even going back to, you know, the earlier part when I was, you know, in clinical research, is that there were so many clinical trials that, you know, we thought were going to be the big one. We thought it was going to be the big breakthrough, only to have the trial end up failing. And it just, you know, it just became this pattern that we would see, you know, over the course of a decade, 15 years. And what's really exciting now is the fact that we are now doing prevention trials. So, you know, we're still doing trials in people who are, you know, symptomatic and have a clinical diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. But we are also doing prevention studies in people who are at either a genetic or biological risk, you know, having a high level of amyloid in the brain. And we're putting them into prevention studies to actually, you know, test to see if we can actually do this, if we can actually administer a treatment in the preclinical stage and not have it, you know, turn into what we, you know, clinically know as Alzheimer's disease. One of the exciting, now, although the drug development and the treatment development has not been as fast as we want it to be, the one thing that I will say has been just remarkable in the last decade is the degree to which our diagnostic capacity has completely changed and gotten so much better. The PET scans that we use in most of our research studies and in some very select cases in clinical settings, those are very much a huge innovation, huge step forward in getting us to a place where we can actually talk about doing Alzheimer's prevention. And then, as I mentioned earlier, in the next 2 to 3 years, you know, we're going to start seeing, you know, the blood tests for Alzheimer's disease come online. So those will be, you know, much cheaper and much more accessible, you know, than brain scans. And really, you know, getting these screening tools, you know, dispersed in a much wider fashion is really what I think is going to be really, really helpful once we get, you know, good disease modifying treatments that are, you know, would finally be approved by the FDA. But really, you know, there's a lot to be excited for right now, both in terms of our ability to diagnose and identify Alzheimer's disease, but then also to have treatments that are actually attacking the disease itself.
This is remarkable. And when you said that in the near future, we're going to have the first survivor of Alzheimer's disease, like Heather, something inside of me just wanted to stand up and cheer.
Yeah. And I will say that for me, you know, the first time I heard that, it really took me a little while to wrap my head around the concept of it. And it really wasn't until that I, you know, talked to, you know, some other clinical colleagues and, you know, the research colleagues that I really kind of got a better, you know, more concrete, you know, conceptually a concept of, you know, what a survivor of Alzheimer's disease would look like and how that would actually happen. And it's a very exciting thing to be able to talk about. And, you know, it's something that, you know, it's something we should have been talking about, you know, a decade, 15 years ago. But, you know, the fact that we're doing it now is going to, you know, benefit, you know, so many more people in the coming years.
This has been an inspirational and hopeful conversation. Before we go today, could you give us your final thought when it comes to the science of preventing Alzheimer's disease?
To basically recap, anybody who is affected by Alzheimer's disease, either directly or indirectly, being, you know, a family member, a caregiver, you know, don't lose hope. We are really, really close to getting to a place where, you know, we're not going to, you know, where we don't see you know, just the devastating effects that, you know, we typically associate with the disease. You know, I just encourage people who are, you know, willing and able to get into a clinical trial and, you know, really do as much as you can and be as proactive as you can, because, you know, when you get to do a clinical trial, there's going to be people on the other side who are going to meet you halfway and are just as passionate and just as, you know, inspired to, you know, help, you know, people with the disease as much as the patients want to be helped. And I will say that for another, you know, really important aspect for anybody to think about too, is that we've been very lucky that in the last several years now, the federal funding for Alzheimer's disease research has increased substantially. And we need to keep that pace up, because for many years, Alzheimer's disease funding, you know, lagged, you know, substantially compared to other diseases and conditions. And we're just now getting it to a place where it's, you know, equal to, you know, to what other diseases and things have gotten in terms of their funding. So I would really just, you know, implore people to really support their elected officials who are supporting, you know, Alzheimer's disease research and who are making it a priority. And, you know, if they're not, really, you know, make sure that their elected officials are, you know, making it a priority and putting the funding toward it so that we can cure Alzheimer's disease.
Today, our conversation has been with Dr. Mike Malek Amadi, a bioinformatics scientist with Banner Alzheimer's Institute. We so appreciate you helping us untangle the science behind prevention research in Alzheimer's disease.
I'm very happy to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Malek Amadi, for a fantastic conversation. And thank you, Heather. And we want to always thank you, our amazing listeners. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.